Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace and unity in Europe. This one is now about the very special 9th of May, the European Day, the day to celebrate the European Union, the officially dedicated day for this celebration. And that's, of course, a very big day. And I congratulate everybody who is in Europe, who is European, who is a friend of Europe. And I hope that's most of the world, because we are a project of peace. We are a project of prosperity. We are the counter project to a communist or fascist Europe, which led to so much destruction and misery in the world. This is the European Union. It is basically the peaceful and prosperous counter proposal to the terrors of the past, the shadows of the Holocaust and of the World War II and of communist takeover. This is the European Union. We are the anti-project to our terrible, horrorful past and to this alternative Europe, which there was too much of it in the 20th century. We have overcome it, and we can be very proud about that. I'm a very convinced and committed pro-European, and I'm very much celebrating this 9th of May every single year, and I call everybody should do that. Please also understand it. The Day of Liberation is the 8th of May. It's important to see these 2 days in the context. The 8th of May, the Liberation Day, the end of Nazi terror occupation and the defeat of the Third Reich, and the 9th of May, the day when this alternative new project, the Good Europe, came together again and united, together with American help, I will talk about it, to this European Union we have now successfully now celebrating. It's 2021 this year. It was, in that sense, announced. It was not created, but announced in 1950 on the 9th of May. So it's basically 71 years where at least Western Europe, and only later after the fall of the communist disaster, and then also Eastern Europe, has united. And I call that all Europeans who want should be part of that project. I made already this Twitter message. It was not very popular. But all of these people who celebrate Europe today and are against enlargement, like some French politicians, for example, it's better for them not to celebrate. We don't need such fake celebrations. Yes, we are together, but the rest is excluded. No, 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 no. It should be very clear this day is also the day for enlargement. It's the day for European unity for all Europeans. Everybody is welcomed and invited. Sure, the Macedonians, the Montenegrins, the Albanians, absolutely. And once they are in NATO, then obviously also then the countries like Kosovo, Bosnia, Serbia, Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova, absolutely. Of course, you have to will for political unification. So for Turkey, it's not possible. It's not possible also for countries who are allied with Russia. Because Europe very much is a project built to be free from Russian domination and Soviet domination. So who is allied with Russia, he is not welcome in the European Union. And I will explain in detail why. And we have to understand how Europe came about. What was the historic context of the 9th of May 1950, when the father of Europe, Robert Schuman, he has the official title as father of Europe, he is seen as one of our founding fathers. The exact denomination founding fathers is maybe a little bit vaguer in Europe and less well known, like in the United States, where you have the founding fathers of your constitution. But we in Europe have the founding fathers, and the most important probably is also Robert Schuman, who made this speech as a French foreign minister. He also was then prime minister of France. He was later then the first parliament president. And he made this speech in the context of 1950 and the 9th of May. And I will read you some of these excerpts in this wonderful speech, because it is now denominated, obviously, as the founding moment of the European Union. In some ways, it's also a bit of mythology, because then the real treaty was signed in the Treaty of Paris. That was in 51, and then was the Treaty of Rome in 57. So Europe developed contrary to the United States, which had independence war, constitutional assembly, a constitution announced, independence announced. You can define it in this bigger kind of steps, right? Because a country was created. Of course, in Europe, six countries have united in a gradual process. And so this was the beginning of this process. And it was also clear that this is just the beginning for the people who designed this speech and who have worked on it. And for Mr. Schumann, who worked his whole life from that moment for many, many years in many different functions to get the job done and to lead Europe to unity. Remember, it was only six countries. Germany, Western Germany was included, France, the three Benelux countries, Luxembourg, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Italy. The rest of NATO Europe, or free Europe in a way, and because the processes were parallel to each other, and they could not join, America obviously, Canada, but also all in all it was 12 countries who created NATO, but Portugal was no democracy at that time. And the countries of Northern Europe were not included because they were seen as a different economic area, all under British domination, Denmark, Ireland, and Iceland, and Norway, and the United Kingdom itself. And they partly, of course, joined in 73, three of them. And then, unfortunately, Norway and Iceland never managed it. And Portugal later, after democracy in 86. So that was why only six countries were there to join. The rest was either partly Soviet occupied or not available. And they were at war like Greece. And it was, of course, a very hard and disastrous time. The conditions of the speech were quite dramatic. On the 9th of May, the French Foreign Minister Robert Schuman, and it's important also to mention some of his speech writers. They are now in the Valhalla of European founding fathers, but maybe well known. But obviously Jean Monnet is the most well known. He is the instigator and the driver of also the industrial side of the victory of the Allies and also of French recovery, but then of European unification. He has a huge role as the one maybe nudging and pushing Mr. Robert Schuman to write this speech, but there's also others like Paul Reuter and Pierre Ury and all this team, basically from the planning committee of the French state, who were drafting this project. And here's the text. It is no longer a question of vain words, but of a bold act, a constructive act. France has acted, and the consequences of its action can be immense. We hope they will be. France has acted primarily for peace and to give peace a real chance. Interestingly, it was then later by John Lennon into a big song, but to give peace a real chance was Robert Schuman's and possibly Monet's text. For this, it is necessary that Europe should exist. 5 years, almost to the day, and that was why the day was also chosen, after the unconditional surrender of Germany, France is accomplishing the first decisive act for European construction and it's associating Germany with this. Conditions in Europe are going to be entirely changed because of it. This transformation will facilitate other actions, which has been impossible until this day. I mean, it is a historic thing 5 years after disasters that Nazi Germany brought over France and whole Europe and the world, yeah, to have this step of unification proposed is, of course, a major thing. Europe will be born from this, a Europe which is solidly united and constructed around a strong framework. It will be a Europe where the standard of living will rise by grouping together production and expanding markets, thus encouraging the lowering of prices. Interesting here already, a big focus on consumers, on market, on joint industrial production, and a different, not less a political approach towards unification, but the economic approach, which was so important. In this, and so successful, in this Europe, the Ruhr, the Saar, and the French industrial basins will work together for a common goal, and their progress will be followed by observers from the United Nations. Here it's important to understand that the UN was just created some years before, 45, and it was the United Nations for the defeat of the Axis and against fascism. So there was a close US-led effort in the. It was not so much the idea that the Russians and the Chinese have a say in that, but it was obviously the Allies in that time. And it's important to understand, and I will talk more about it, what is the Ruhr, the Saar, and the French industrial basin? Because here, this enormous river, the Rhine, this arteria of prosperity for transport, but also with all this wealth which is attached to it, this ancient rainforests then turned into coal basins. This industrial wealth of Europe along the Rhine was, of course, contentious token of wars between France and Germany for centuries, and especially then in the whatever, it was already the third big war, which was fought about that from 1870 to the First World War to the Second World War. And it had a huge meaning because obviously parts of Germany was after the Second World War occupied, especially the Saar and the Ruhr, and they were the industrial heartlands of the war machine of the industrial Germany, and they were occupied by the Allies, especially by the French. And then this played a big role in the decision to Europeanize. And you might remember I talk a lot about Europeanizing of European public companies. The idea is not so new. Anyhow, Mr. Robert Schuman continued. All Europeans without distinction. Yes, without distinction. So also the Kosovo Europeans and the Europeans from Ukraine and from Albania. Whether from the East or West. And all the overseas territories, especially Africa. Look, he was definitely also including Algeria. You know, I'm not going so far, but it's important to remember in 1950, Algeria was obviously integral part of France, which awaits a development and prosperity from this old continent will gain benefits from their labor of peace. That's the Schuman Declaration. Given the context of how it was basically then, when the war was just 5 years over, NATO was created just 1 year before, and obviously the American effort behind it was huge, and there was clearly the Cold War starting to really escalate fully. Never forget, just days after this, 9th of May, then in the mid of June 1950, the Korea War broke loose and hell was returning. It was, now we forgot it often, but it was a terrible confrontation between the Soviet bloc, China and North Korea on the one side, and the free world, the United Nations actually leading this war and to defend South Korea. And obviously this was then leading also to the Treaty of Paris, where the coal and steel community was agreed. It's important to see it was the coal and steel community, not the European Union. Because today in the mystification of our own greatness, which we Europeans unfortunately have the tendency to do, we then somehow celebrate the EU today, which is good, it's legitimate. But let's not forget, it was the coal and steel community. It was very much about economic integration. It was very much about the war industry to unify it. And it was also very much about the German the Western occupation regime imposed on Germany, which was very unpopular in Western Germany, because the Western German, rightly so, Adenauer said, we are now a democratic country. We have been allowed to establish the Federal Republic. But still, it's this occupation regime in the Saar and the Ruhr. It was very unpopular, especially because of the dismantling of industries. And the workers also didn't enjoy so much to see their factories dismantled in Germany and then rebuilt in France. So it was pretty unsustainable. And the whole effort was very much also a kind of Europeanization of the occupation regime of the coal basins of Germany. Might it be seen popular today or not, but this was one of the facts. Before, there was the International Authority for the Ruhr. This is like Donbass is now more famous, but the Ruhr is the central steel and coal heart of the German industry in that time. Now steel may be playing a lesser role and coal a much lesser role, and everybody hates coal today, while we still buy so much from Russia, unfortunately, which we shouldn't. And so I'm against Russian coal, not the coal, against coal in itself. But it was the start of the European unification process, and it worked very well. The commission was established out of the successor of the International Ruhr Authority, which was basically the economic management system by the Allies for Western Germany. And so, and this is the origin of the European Union. And then obviously then came the Korea War, and then the efforts to really get it done and started and get the Paris Treaty signed. And there was no nonsense time at that time. The war in Korea was almost lost. The Americans certainly had less patience with anybody obstructing this Western European unification process, first in industrial area, but then also politically, because it was simply needed, because the Korea War made it clear that the Western German industrial resources and the Western German military resources have to be utilized also for the defense of free Europe. And that was decisive then after the Korea War started. And this led also then to the big steps of NATO membership, which in that time more correctly was called Western German rearmament. Obviously also very controversial. And in that way, when then Western German rearmament, meaning NATO membership, was on the agenda during the London treaties and the processes of what to do with the occupation regime in Germany, then it was clearly necessary to economically neutralize Germany. That was the French condition. So a stronger European Union, a coal and steel community, was the price for NATO membership of Western Germany. So it was this context where all these organizations were created and where it was then possible to move towards the Treaty of Rome. I talked a lot already about how decisive then the Suez Crisis, the Hungarian Crisis, and obviously the defeat in Dien Bien Phu for the French in Vietnam was in all these processes. But let's never forget, we are now not in 56, 57, but we are in 1950, in the beginning, where it all started, and how it was important, obviously, the Europeanization of the German occupation regime of the Ruhr and of the Saar. Good, that's the one thing. The other thing is, which we should also keep in mind when we today we discuss happily about European sovereignty, that it was very much the Americans who helped, obviously, and held the keys for power. Let's not forget, you know, the big exclusion crisis in France, and with the communists being excluded from the government, but and also France still militarily hugely not occupied, but a strong military presence of America still there. But let's talk more about the moments which are to the institutional support. Here it's important to see everything Europe actually, one can say that, I think it's quite decent to say it like this, that the 9th of May is our own celebration day, the 9th of May 1950. But Europe and the whole process was really started with the adoption of the directive of the Joint Chief of Staff 1779. And this was the decision to economically allow redevelopment of Western Germany. Because in the beginning, of course, after all these terrors which the Nazis did, and the mood was on revenge and not on rebuilding and getting this opportunity back to Germany and the Germans to develop peacefully and get rich again. And here there was this joint chief of staff, that's the American High Command. They have this Security Council and they have these directives, which is for all extent and purposes the regulatory foreign policy mechanism of the time for countries which were under military occupation. And here in July, let me get it right, it was 47, yes, exactly. It was in 47. And here in the summer, on the 10th of July, or was it the 14th, it was then the decision to allow Western German economic redevelopment. And then also made a lot of talk about it already. You might remember the historic and game-changing decision after this strategic decision was done, was the economic decision to end this German occupation mark, which the Soviets overprinted so recklessly and lived on the cost of the West and paid for all the occupation with printing Western, also Eastern German occupation marks, yeah, which was a unified currency. And then the Allies decided to leave this common currency system and to create the German mark, which we knew now, which we know now, this American-backed, dollar-backed currency, which was the same policy also the Americans did for Japan. And this was the decisive moment. This led then to the Berlin blockade. And then the Americans had the effort and the leadership and also the logistic capability to do the airlift to supply West Berlin. And then West Berlin was saved. And Stalin basically had to retreat. He saw there is no more gain to be made in the West after he had taken over Czechoslovakia and the power in all Eastern European countries. He had direct military occupation. In West Berlin, there he found the resistance too stiff. And so he moved then towards the Asian theater and started the Korea War. In the meantime, obviously, there was much effort in the West to build up this European Union and do something with free Europe, American liberated, American occupied, but how to organize it, how to rebuild then once this decision was made, because there was terrible hunger in Germany especially, but the economic conditions in all Western Europe due to the war, but also due to this difficult post-war years and also to the threat of the Soviet Union, it was a disaster. And then there were the various efforts. I've talked already about the, but it's important to see it as sisters because these were created by the same people. It was the same American decision makers who created NATO, the Defense Alliance, the OSCE and its successor organization, OSSE, OSSE. This is of the Marshall Fund. It's better to talk like with names of personalities which shaped the world. This was the Marshall Fund, the economic reconstruction, then Churchill and his Council of Europe, still today, so important organization for human rights. Unfortunately, they have this soft spot on Russia. And obviously, these were the three sisters in a way. And then the fourth one and the most complicated one and the most sensitive one, because in the Council of Europe, it's about human rights. It's very important democracy, absolutely. But there's little economic aspects and there was no kind of supranationality. Same as well in NATO. There is little economic aspect. It was, of course, very important, no doubt. Yeah. And also in the OECD, it was about economics, but just about cooperation and coordination. The fourth one and the most difficult to create was the supranational nucleus of a common management, yeah, of the coal and steel, and later also to have a competition authority and to have a high court, to maybe build a customs union and to head for a currency union. I mean, how much more important and ambition you can get than a customs union, a currency union, competition authority to decide against big monopolies and cartels. Yeah? I mean, it cannot be more important than that economically and therefore also politically. And this fourth baby, in a way, of this fourth sister was, of course, the most complicated. The British were shocked to that something is created. It took a long time until they could or should join. And obviously, it was a big effort and it has to be celebrated. There's no doubt. And all these personalities like Schumann, Adenauer, De Gasperi, they are also to be celebrated each 9th of May. Let's mention their names and let's always celebrate them. And Spark and others. But also, let's not forget that it was the American Committee for a United Europe. And here, there were really the key players were obviously Truman and Marshall. But there were this, and the operational side inside the American Committee for a United Europe. It was many important Americans who basically were intelligence officers. Yeah. It's not that the CIA has created Europe. So let's not get it wrong, because this would be the wrong way to put it. But it was the people who were fighting in the intelligence community against Nazi terror and then who led the Cold War. It was these people as well who understood that only a prosperous Western Europe, a prosperous and economically successful free Europe here in the West, can successfully compete against the huge Soviet juggernaut. And that was also the idea, to compete, to outperform free and the Soviet and the totalitarian world of the East with a successful Western Europe. And for that, continental unification and the big internal market and this anti-cartel policy and the unification of the steel and coal industry were absolutely vital, and they were understanding that. Donovan is one of the names I would like to mention, but the Dulles brothers, they were in this committee. And also then, it was not, you know, it was not the idea. It's also wrong to say it was the American idea to unite Europe. But America had the political will and the political might. And basically, America was anyhow militarily controlling Italy, France, and Germany in that years. So it was decisive, and they supported it. They supported it. The ideas obviously were European ideas. Here there's two important movements to be mentioned. And that's obviously the pan-European movement of Kutenhove Kalergi, still today very active. And I'm also a friend of many of them. And also the European movement, yeah, of Rettinger and also of Winston Churchill. There were two different strains, also politically a bit divided, the more conservative one and the more liberal or left-wing one. But nevertheless, both of them had their contribution. And it's interesting as well, when you want to read more about this movements, there's a lot of books and material out there. But all these ideas, they were after the First World War already out there. And there was a great congresses celebrated about European unification. Some of the ideas might sound bizarre when you look, you know, about a world with many, with just a few states and all these things. But when you translate it and adopt it for the reality of today, when I call about, you know, these regional integration systems of the African Union and of ASEAN and so, it's maybe, if you had translate it in the context of political language and of potential future scenarios of the 2020s, then many of the ideas are really very good. And this is to be mentioned. I think we owe them a lot, and this gentleman and these fathers of European unification ideas already in the 1920s. They saw the horrors of the First World War, and they were ready to make proposals and to meet up and to organize. And these are, we owe them a lot. These people have contributed massively to this positive side of the European success story in the last 71 years. But anybody who wants to build a Europe against America or talks about European sovereignty today is leading us in a dead-end street. We are united with the Americans from the start, and it's a good thing. We are American Europe. The alternative would always be some disaster, a Russian-backed Europe or a kind of third-way socialist Europe leading us in a Yugoslavian decline and defeat, or a kind of even more horrible vision of the past, which we had already. So our future is, as we are, we have built it successfully since 1950. It is an American-backed Europe. That's why it's so important. And that's why I call it also to translate these ideas in the 2020s, the EU joining NATO as a full ally, and the EU neutrals to join NATO, and also to build then the US and the EU this TTIP, the Free Trade Agreement, and also then to use the OECD, the Marshall Plan Foundation Organization, to help all free democracies to develop working market democracies. So this is the logic of also these foundational moments which we have here in these years from 47, the Joint Chiefs of Staff Directive 1779. I would like to mention also the German American administrator for Free Germany, Mr. Clay, but also Herbert Hoover, who has not a very good reputation because he was the president of America during the great financial crisis. But he became actually president because Wilson tasked him to be the savior of Europe after First World War, who organized American food supplies for Western Europe and for Central Europe as well after the horrors. He was the master of disaster, they called him, but in a positive sense. He was the man who was the basically, I mean, he's the man for international humanitarian relief. That what he should be remembered globally. And he came to post-war Europe again. And he said, we have to do something. and you know, he decided all these things in his reports. Obviously, the decision was with Truman. But that the Western Europeans can be today talking about sovereignty and about our illusions of global power and geostrategic things is connected with the fact that the Americans after the Second World War were so generous to organize the Marshall Fund and to do the hunger relief and to set Western Europe on a growth trajectory, which was then so successful after, of course, 71 years and three generations, we can assess it. And we can see it was very successful to build a second America in Western Europe, a continental unification with a central government. It was called Commission, and it's to this day called Commission because this was the title the French loved for the Ruhr. And so we had this history. And if we forget it, and if we then build and celebrate Europe just as a thing different from America, of course we are two different unification projects and we have two different, but we should never forget how we were, first of all, who really won the battle against the Nazi terror regime. It was not the Soviet Union. It was the Soviet Union backed by American financial technology, industrial capacity. This is also so important to understand. And then it was definitely also then the free West and united America securing Western European freedom and prosperity via the EU unification process. And it worked so well. And that then once the Cold War was won, because we outperformed economically the Soviet world, then it was also possible to integrate all these new countries, the 30 new countries we have already. But in this kind of narrative, it's so logical to include all the Western Balkan six countries once they are in NATO, and also to include Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova on the same model like Western Germany was included in NATO and in the EU. Of course, the occupied parts we cannot take along because that's impossible. That's the Soviet or now today Russian power which controls this part. But the most of the countries, in all cases, 90%, around 90%, 10% is occupied by the Soviets, Russians now, of Ukraine and Georgia and Moldova. But the 90% of the people, they can join the same, like America, like Hoover said, let's help the Western Germans. And Truman invited them to organize the Truman Doctrine, and it was later Eisenhower in 55 who allowed Western Germany to be a full member of NATO. And the same generosity we need to show today towards the free Ukraine, I call it free, the free European Ukraine, the Federal Republic of Ukraine, if you want to call it like this, just Ukraine, but unfortunately without the occupied territories. This is impossible, but we can include these 40 million people from Ukraine in the West. Yeah, as the, I think, I don't know exactly how many population it was in Western Germany at that moment, possible about 60. So that's the thing we have to celebrate today, this kind of courage at that time. It's a lot of information out there. If you want to go in more details, I recommend to read the book Present at the Creation of Dean Acheson, who is the American Secretary of State. But there's many Americans we have to honor, and they were documenting, of course, Marshall, of course, Hoover, of course, then Truman himself, and Eisenhower, obviously. And this we should always have, I think, this same as we should never forget the horrors of the Nazi past. We should also not just glorify, but be grateful for the liberators of the free Europe and the ones who have safeguarded and allowed Western Europe on this trajectory of prosperity, which was so successful now in the last 71 years. If, you know, some details, we are not always, you know, on taxes, I talked a lot, and on other issues, it's not the perfection we have in Western Europe or in the EU, but, you know, we have freedom, we have security, we have prosperity, we have the rights. This is all thanks to American wisdom and our own visionaries, which were ready to do it and to communicate it and to lead it. Robert Schuman, deservedly so, has the title Father of Europe. And as I have called already Jean Monnet and all the others and Adenauer, here I call again to translate it also in the context of the year 2021, which is today so important. It's not about mystification and glorification of past heroes, but what we can learn from their courageous act and their visionary leadership for today's Europe. That's why I call for Zelensky to be the Adenauer of Ukraine. Probably in Ukraine, nobody understands what I want to say with that. I'm quite misunderstood the last 5 years on that one. But maybe somebody else will understand what I want to say with be the Adenauer. It means, yeah, you have to focus on NATO integration, on EU integration, on currency reform. You cannot regain the lost territories who are lost for now. They will not be lost forever, as we have seen in the case of German unification. And so, but in order to get to this point of potential unification, you have to be successful as Western Germany. So that's the Adenauer. That's the reason for the euro in Ukraine and Moldova and Georgia. And that is the sense and the logic to apply it. We need, as I have said, a new Truman doctrine. That's why I call for Biden to be the new Truman, and to have this courage. Yeah? And I call for today's European leader. Let's see who will lead Germany in the 2020s. Will it be Laschet? I think yes. And he knows much of what I say here, obviously. Will it be Baerbock? I think she will also understand. Yeah? Let's see what's happening. Whoever will run and rule France in the 2022 elections, let's see, hopefully it will be Barnier. He knows very well what I'm talking about. But we have to include, obviously, Ukraine, the Balkans, and the countries. That's the mission and the vision. It was very unpopular. Let's come back to 1950, to rearm Germany and to have economic integration with Germany. It was really very unpopular in France in that years. There was not a euro built on friendship or on kind of generosity. Let's not fool ourselves. This was not a generous plan or a friendship between people. It was strategic necessity of the Soviet threat. And it was clear economic calculus that a united Europe with a big market, with the control of the industrial assets united, will not go to war among each other. And it will be also much richer, and it can compete with the Soviet juggernaut and contain hostile Soviet and Russia. That was the reason why it was built. That was also very difficult to do. I don't want to diminish any of these leaders of the past who were ready for this courage to contain the Soviet threat, to unite Europe, to allow Western German military and economic and political rehabilitation after all the terrors of the past. They are the heroes. They are rightly so celebrated every single day. But if we just celebrate the European heroes without mentioning the American heroes who made it all possible, who also paid for it, who also instigated, who provided the military protection to get it done, then we are just losing out long term, because we can be easily divided by the Soviets, by the Russians today, in this kind of divisive attitude they always try to bring, this big hammer of anti-Americanism and anti-Europeanism between our alliance partners in America and in Europe. And then obviously they spread all this kind of racist ideas and this kind of anti-Americanism, which is so ripe. And also then this anti-Europeanism in the GOP. This is very much coming from Russia, because it's their strategic interest to divide the West. And I think that should be the main message of the 9th of May. United, we will be very successful. We can be open, strong, and successful for the coming decades. And that is the message for a united Europe. That's the celebration of the Schuman. That's the mission of the European founding fathers. Yes, to a deeper united Europe, but to enlarged Europe, absolutely. Yes, to an alliance with America. And that was anyhow very clear at that moment, and it should be very clear today. We need much stronger American-European unity in the coming decades ahead for the global challenges to face, and that should be our priority. That's the message I have for the 9th of May. And now for peace, for Europe, for TTIP, for NATO, and for OECD as a global outreach platform, and for peace, stability, and prosperity, for enlarged Europe with Ukraine inside and the Balkans inside. And that's the way for peace in the world. Thanks a lot. Celebrate the European Day.